Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a technology presentation from November 2017. Mr. Charles Ross, performance sportswear design consultant, presents Insulation via Nonwovens.
I'm Charles. I'm going to try and moderate the discussion. It's easy because I've got four people who know an awful lot more than me about the technicalities of the science, and one person, Anna, on my side, who realizes the frustration that brands have in communicating the message which is coming from the ingredient suppliers through to the consumers and the various problems on it. We are in the book as Insulation via Nonwovens. We're not really going to talk about that. That was the title they gave us. When I asked people about thermoregulation, that wasn't what came back. Thermoregulation was something really quite different. This is our start point. What thermoregulation is, I presume everyone can hear me. Can I give a choice? I would rather not read out what's on the stand, on the slide, because you can all read it. But does anyone want me to read the contents of the slides? Are you all right with me talking? Good. Thermoregulation, I think we agree on that common definition. What we would like to do is address in this seminar the miscomprehensions, the hassles, the problems, generally what people don't understand, what it involves. But when I spoke to 36 different brands, people, developers, I must say thank you to them all, but the list is too long. This is what started to come back. How does thermoregulation and textiles interact? And we had problems with textiles, with fabrics, with insulations, with nonwovens, but these were the three main core themes that came out. And because of that, I made friends very quickly with people who knew lots more. So what we've done is we've tried to balance the panel in that for those of you who don't know them individually, we have Anna on the far end, Montaigne. Montaigne, I describe as the most brilliantly disruptive brand in the British outdoors. In the last 2 years, they have upset the whole of the field in a very positive way. We have Primaloft, and it was a real competition between Primaloft and Polartec about who I was going to choose to represent the synthetic story. And Primaloft have changed vastly from where I really understood them 5 years ago. Whereas Polartec, sorry, Eric, over there, your communication has actually been really strong. And people didn't want to know about Polartec fabrics. They wanted to know about Primaloft. So hence, Stefan's with us. We have Jerome from Flocus, because we've all heard of Flocus, but I've yet to find a person who really understands it. So hence, we have the font of all knowledge. Martin, representing the people who instituted the biggest, most widely recognized testing program used by the outdoor industry. Gore developed their breathability standards using Hockenstein. That wasn't Martin himself, but that was the fundamental start of a comparison that we could all work to and we could all understand. So I'd like Martin to talk on a wider brief than that. And finally, we've got Ahan from HD Wool. Wool, we all know, works. Every one of us have tried wool, and it works. But whenever we put it on a measurement scale, it comes off really badly. So there's something a bit odd there. And hopefully Ahan, who's PhD now? Yes. Very switched on, will be able to demystify what it is about wool that we can't measure and what we should be open to. But the good news is, I'm waffling, we're coming to the end of my chatty bit, so I can pass on. These are the three questions that I have formulated to put to the panel, and that will start the conversation. This seminar will only become good if you guys all join in. So please, if you don't understand, stick up your hand, heckle me. And I would like more of this seminar to be on questions prompted by the audience than the ones up here. By the end of this discussion, I hope that you guys as developer designers, will have more confidence in when you're speaking to us ingredient brands about what you want as far as fabrics and insulations and non-wovens to match up for the thermoregulation need. Very briefly, this is me. Most of you know me. All you need to know about me is my email address. Nice and simple. Don't need to talk anymore. But this is the bit I throw it to the panel. So going back to the first question, thermoregulation, is it an impossibility for a fabric to offer both insulation and cooling? And can I turn to Anna from Montaigne first up, please? We've got a microphone.
I think it's on.
It is, Anna.
Yeah.
What does thermoregulation mean to you?
I think looking at thermoregulation, we would be looking at the combination of fabrics that we'd put into a garment and how we zone the garment. So obviously not just taking one thing for what it is and using that fill or that synthetic insulation throughout a product and looking at how we can best zone it for the activity that we're actually directing that garment towards. For example, we might use a synthetic insulation in areas where you might sweat more. And a downfill somewhere else, and then we have to combine it with the right face fabrics so that you get the right levels of stretch or levels of resistance to durability so that you're getting the best performance that you can from that product for the activity that you're designing it for. And so that for thermoregulation, you're getting the best of both worlds throughout the product.
How complicated is it? Should be the part two. Is there a fabric that can do everything?
There's maybe certain types of fabrics or insulations that will work well for different things, but I think it's about looking at that and the different forms that it might come in. So there might be different weights or different types of a certain product. For example, with the PrimaLoft, we use it in different weights. We use it with the stretch on the PrimaLoft Active Gold Plus, and we might use the down blend in either the gold or the silver, depending on what level that garment is being placed at and what it's being aimed for.
Brilliant. That is what I feel, but we've got a much more attractive voice saying it. Thank you, Anna. Can we go on to Stefan, please?
Sure.
Thermoregulation, what does it mean to you?
So, actually, you started already with the introduction. We have been known since many years and decades as an insulation company. Actually, since a few years, we really stand for comfort solution, which means we are really offering a very diversified product portfolio from offering different technologies and applications which go from really synthetic fibers, synthetic insulations over natural blends to roll goods, to loose fill, loose fibers. And actually, we have been in insulation, but we are also offering fabrics which are based on our PrimaLoft yarn, which go into fleece mid-layer and also into base layer. So having said this, we see, let's say, thermal regulation a little bit wider and as a broader approach. So for example, we see really the complete clothing system from skin to shell because we are in all these different kind of layers. And for sure, in each layer, thermal regulation is a major part. So, for example, if you take our product platform, which is called Active, this is an insulation which is highly breathable, which is also insulating. But as Anna already mentioned, it's more about the clothing system. So each insulation is for sure limited by the fabrics, the outer fabric and the lining fabric. So this Active platform, for example, enables really breathable applications because the lining and shell fabric can be breathable. Yeah, so if you hike uphill, yeah, you get release of your moisture because the whole system is breathable. And if you go down and you need more insulation, yeah, for sure it's not really cooling. Yeah, but then for sure you feel the insulation and the whole system keeps you comfortable under whatever condition.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stefan. Should we go on to Jerome for the same question? Well, but we're really going to start to work on you now. Flocus. Come on. We all pretend we know what Flocus is. We have the person who can describe it properly.
I hope so.
And how does it work into thermoregulation?
I hope so. If you can go to the next slide, it will be a little bit easier to explain. If to come back to your first question, it's indeed providing an insulative comfort zone for the person who wears the product, and on a sustainable focus, because we use kapok, which comes from a tree, and the fiber is from inside a fruit, which only uses natural resources. So the main thing for the fruit is on insulation is that it is a hollow fiber. And the hollow cavity is 70 to 80% of this fiber. So it means it's extremely insulating, and tests have shown that it is equal to down, both in thermoregulation as an evaporative resistance. So it's a very comfortable warmth like down. It's extremely light and soft. And to me, it provides a negative footprint. So it does provide a high comfort, a good insulation, and a sustainable solution for fillings. Is that good enough for now?
That makes sense to me. Everyone happy with that? We'll let him off for the next
more questions I can accept later.
On to Martin. Martin from Hockenstein.
Yeah.
Harnish from Hockenstein, yes.
Yeah, hello. I'm coming more from the sports science, so I start when hearing about thermoregulation, with human thermoregulation, what the body itself does to be in a comfortable state, to maintain the body core temperature. But in the second stage, there is something called social thermoregulation, and then it's something like putting on garments or clothing in the end. So, yeah, of course, the clothing can have a big impact on the human thermoregulation. And when choosing the right clothing system, then we have to look on what we are doing under what conditions. The others already said it's something different going up the mountain or going down the mountain. It depends on the speed I'm going up or down, if there is wind, if there is sun, which possibly gives me back some heat. And in the end, the wearer of some clothing systems needs to be in a weight state so that heat gain and heat loss is approximately the same. And of course, no clothing system can do everything, I would say. On the second slide, possibly I wrote, no one would go for running in a cold protective suit for work in a cold storage house, but on the other side, no one would work in sports clothing with short sleeves in a cold storage house as well. The big thing is to find the best insulation in the end, and with our testing systems, we can define a range of utility of a clothing system.
Ihan.
Good morning, everybody. I definitely agree. It's very important to choose the material that is suitable for the conditions and for the activity level. However, still, I think even when we are choosing a material that's suitable for certain conditions or certain activity level, there are changes happening within that range as well. For example, if we will look at the body and how its thermoregulation is mainly about the body feeling comfortable. And if we will look at the body and how where it feels comfortable, it's very narrow range. It's about like 3.5 degrees centigrade. And the main important thing about the materials that we are using is to widen that range, to give us more thermoregulation, so we feel better when the conditions are changing, because it's rarely really that the body is in a steady condition. All the time, the activity levels are changing, even small changes, for example, like a 20 watts of metabolic rate will drop the temperature of the comfort by 1 degree centigrade. So it's really for the material to be able to regulate itself and to adapt to that.
I mean, to open this up, I'm sure we all appreciate, with the core body temperature, if we go down 5 degrees, it is survivable, we will recover. If we go up 5 degrees, we will die, which is pretty definitive. So yes, on the back of that, if I go back to, if I was really professional, I would have had this sorted. Part two. Laboratory test methods, how realistic are they? Would you guys at the technical end like to start on this? Martin?
Yeah, they are as realistic as they can be. Of course, we cannot simulate everything. For example, the Schwedengarde tot plate, the so-called skin model, is defined to simulate the heat loss of the human body. We can simulate the dry heat loss and then thermal insulation of a fabric. We also can measure water vapor resistance. And in Hohenstein, we also established further values characterizing the liquid sweat management. And in combination with mannequins, we can simulate a lot of things. And with the results, we also could simulate a huge variety of ambient conditions and activities of the wearer of a clothing system. Yeah.
Just a side question, how affordable is what you've just described?
It depends on the state of your development.
Mm-hmm. But the if we go for sweat
Measurements with the skin model are very affordable.
Okay.
So you, with the skin model, you can start with a huge variety of your recent materials and then find the best fabrics and then go to the mannequin to tailor a T-shirt or a jacket or whatever. Of course, the mannequin is more expensive than the skin model because on the one hand, you need to tailor a clothing system, a jacket or whatever. And on the other hand, the mannequin is bigger. You need a climatic chamber instead of a climatic cabinet. And in the end of your development, you can test it with subjects, but subjects, you need more testing, you need more time. Of course, this is the most expensive one, but then you can say, okay, this is what the human being is feeling. But on the other hand, we also have calculation systems to at least make a guess about the wear comfort from our laboratory testing with the mannequin and the skin model.
Brilliant. Thank you, Martin. I presume it should be Ihan now, because Ihan has been, he's done a PhD on, I'll let you explain.
Yes, just a little bit background. It's very important. There are many different test methods are currently used. They are basically can be divided into two types. One of them is the conditions at steady state, where we measure the whether it's water vapor permeability or insulation. And we set out the conditions, the temperature, the relative humidity at steady state. And it's good in terms of knowing how the heat flow and the mass in terms of water flow through the material. And one of them is the dry heat loss, which is conduction, could be conduction, radiation, convection. And it's currently measured whether it's a CLO value or it's RCT value. And the other one in terms of water vapor permeability is the evaporation. And in this case, we are only measuring how the water vapor goes through from the skin outside the material without, and we can do so by having the same temperature on the skin as it's on the outside, which is at the moment, it's tested at 35 degrees on both sides. But what this goes is that it's not real life situation. We don't wear insulation materials in these conditions where we have the same body temperature as it's the air temperature. So what really happens is that we wear the insulation material in cold conditions, and whenever we have a difference in temperature between the body and the outside, and also we'll have difference in terms of the humidity, which is generally higher than the outside, it will cause what's known as condensation of the water vapor on the material. The level, it will depend on the conditions, of course, but the condensation will mean that there's more water vapor inside the material, and that will replace the air gaps that provide the insulation, and will have an effect on the insulation itself. And at the time with the water, we'll have more heat loss due to the conduction, wet conduction.
Now, the good news is that if half of that shot over your head, I have been in conversation with Ihan for quite some time, and we were very keen to make this as simple as possible. And perhaps what I've gathered most from Martin and IHAN is that the simpler your test, quite often the less correlation it has to realism. So I'm not going to apologize for bringing in two people who really know what they're talking about, but whereas you might not understand the detail, please recognize the detail is there because it needs to be there. Is that a fair?
Exactly, yes, definitely.
Oh, yes.
Your point is that as sweat evaporates, leaves the skin, goes through, hopefully we've engineered a great lining fabric that's antibacterial and has great MVT, and it goes through, as it approaches the cooler outside membrane, right, which is our shell fabric, it's going to condense. And the condensation is going to be both on the membrane and it's going to be in the outer layers of the insulation, regardless of whether it's, assuming it's a synthetic or it's some sort of a composite. And that once it wets out or starts to have condensation, it stops being thermally efficient or it stops being thermally protective. That's your point, yes?
Yes, yes, yeah.
So to clarify what the question was, things are great in dry conditions, but the moment a fabric wets out, the ball changes, and can we associate that with a test standard? Yeah, please.
Yeah, actually, I think that's really a great question because usually what the industry standard is the so-called dry glow, yeah, which is based on the RCT measurement. So you really measure the performance under dry conditions. But we all know, coming from natural down, once it gets wet, the insulation is collapsing. Yeah, there is no insulation anymore. So as we started PrimaLoft, most of you know from a demand from the military business to really develop an alternative to synthetic down, which also performs under wet conditions, yeah, we definitely, for most of our products, measure and claim a so-called wet glow, yeah, which definitely means our target is always that even under wet conditions, which can happen through a membrane, but it can even happen without membrane if the outer shell material is just with a finishing, yeah, then also some, let's say, rain, humidity can come into the insulation. And we have really most of our products which offer a wet glow between 90 and 95%. That means that we even keep you warm when wet. And this, I think, is a very major point, which in many cases is not really discussed that often. Yeah, but I think the more danger situation is under wet condition to still be warm, yeah, because that can really heavily impact your life situation.
Brilliant, Stefan. Anna, would you like to add to that?
I think from a product perspective, we would always focus on whether, well, the feedback that we get from our athletes and whether the combination of materials that we've used in a product is working effectively for the product that we're trying to create for the activity that we're designing it for. So we obviously use our athletes as well as just in-house testing amongst the staff to test whether a product is using the right weight of fill, whether the fabric is allowing enough air to permeate through it, and whether that thermoregulation is actually being achieved effectively. We also work with Northumbria University to do, we do thermal imaging where we get our athletes into the lab and we get them on a treadmill and get them doing various activities. Look at them in different temperatures and under different conditions, whether it be dry or wet, and look at how the different types of materials and insulations that we use perform in those different environments.
Brilliant. So I think as a group, if you'd like, Jerome, would you like to add anything to it? I think as a group, we're coming to the comprehension. There's a vast difference between active and static insulation. Previously, we've regarded just the measurements of static insulation, but we represent an active sport. So possibly, should we be refocusing on an active insulation, Jerome?
Yeah, I think what is said here is that testing as a wear test is a very easy way to compare different fillings. For us, as also as a young company, it's also not easy to choose what is the right standard to test because you have so many different products which need to be tested on a different test methods. So it's very costly to provide all those information because we can simply not do all the test methods. And what IHAN has done is so great because it actually shows where the market at the moment is for the last 10, 15 years is pushed with a lot of synthetic developments. Now we have more natural, sustainable developments which actually have other type of properties which need to be tested in a different way than the common test standards which are used in the last 10 years. And that's something where a lot of buyers are maybe not completely aware of if they're not technical enough. So I think that's a common perception of how should we test or what is the proper test to choose for. And that's already quite difficult for a lot of people, even for us.
Brilliant. We're all aware as a group of what smart materials are, and we have traditionally associated smart materials, like phase change materials was one of the big movers in the area, to being purely synthetic. What I have noticed is the amount of smartness now coming out of natural materials as well. And whether that smartness is for direct thermoregulation, whether it allows for better thermoregulation. Can I go back to question three? The one about, is there too much bull within the industry? How much can we believe of what our ingredient brands are saying to us? Who would like to start? Anyone?
For us, we have a clear focus, which is sustainability. That's the main goal for our filling. I do think and believe that some of the innovations in the market are driven by marketing rather than real innovation. We have started using a fiber which was given by nature. It's available, and it has really great insulation properties. The fiber itself is innovative, and it inhabits actually synthetic properties, like as being hollow and also being hydrophobic, which is for a natural fiber probably one of the few ones available in textile to be used and also in insulation. So I think a question here is, how authentic is the real message which is given when you provide the insulation? Because of course every fiber has some benefits, and do you only shine the light on the positive ones, or do you also explain what is less positive? So our direction is clear. We want to do sustainable developments, and we are always looking for other options to provide another sustainable development. So we are even looking for corporations, and yes, we are also with Ion, we are having a test on a filling with kapok and wool. So you have another option of a completely natural material which can be fully biodegradable and have actually very interesting performances, but it will come out soon enough, so stay tuned.
Jerome, thank you for that. Can we pass the microphone over? Yes.
Yeah, thanks. So I would, let's say, partially disagree as Primaloft.
That's good. Actually, I want the debate.
It's our task as ingredient brands to develop, let's say, materials, technologies, really which satisfy certain end-use demands. Yeah, this will be jointly made in an early stage together with partners like Lacmontaigne. Yeah, so there will be initial field testing. We will test the products before, and then at the end of the day, there needs to be a win-win for a brand, for an end user, and then for sure, in a joint effort, marketing is communicating the benefits for sure to the end user. Yeah, but that is all based on product development, product testing, and we wouldn't launch any, let's say, new technology if there wouldn't be a reason behind and really a certain.
So you will only bring something to market if it's above the performance of what's already
absolutely
on the market.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And we, as we see more and more really as a scientific material science company, yeah, we work with all different kind of materials. And this is what I said initially. There is not just synthetic insulation. There is not just roll good. We develop natural brands. We work
we're
on
loose fibers.
We're
familiar with gold blend, silver blend, where they are working with both down and
yeah,
polyester.
So actually utilizing the best out of synthetic and natural products. Yeah, this is what we are doing.
Brilliant. Anna, would you like to say anything before I open to a question?
My question is kind of to do with the, when we talk about all the industry spin, when you work within the industry, the language and the understanding of how the technologies, like it's part of our everyday language. So we understand what we're talking about, and we can make probably quite fair comparisons within reason. But how on earth do you then translate that to the consumer assuming that not all consumers are like professional athletes who kind of get given their gear and work with companies. So like for the common person on the street, if they're buying a jacket with a type of insulation, like how do you get over the, how they want to make a comparison? Like, I mean, I don't want to talk about waterproofs, but everyone calls a waterproof jacket a Gore-Tex jacket. And there are many jackets out there that aren't Gore-Tex, but that's become a word synonymous with waterproof for the consumer. And I think there's so much more insulation out there now in the general market at all levels that it, like, how do you communicate to the consumer the benefits of the different types of insulation in a way they can understand? Is that a fair question?
This is going to sound like I've planted Becky, but I've not.
I totally did, yeah.
But Anna, this is straight in your realm. We have the ingredients, but we have a consumer group that it doesn't necessarily stick with. You're the one stuck in the middle. Can I ask you to answer the question?
I'm not stuck.
Sorry. Well, I think as a brand, it's probably our role is to try and get that communication across to people and just be as transparent as we can about what the product is, what's in it, and why those things are beneficial, and then to work with our partner brands like Primaloft and Polartec and Pertex to just explain to people what it is that they're buying into, why they might want to buy into it or not, and why certain things are better for certain activities than other materials might be. I think a large part of it is down to the consumer knowing for themselves what works for them, knowing whether they run hot or cold, whether they want something that's got a sustainable story, knowing what's important to them. And all we can really do is try and best express what is in a product, and so that they can take as much information as they can to make an informed decision about whether it's going to work for them. But I think through marketing and working with brands together, it's probably the best way of trying to communicate with customers as to what it is that they're buying into.
I think that's a wonderful answer. Thank you, Anna. Gentlemen on the end with the testing, would you like to add to what has been said? You don't have to add, but if you feel you have something positive.
Yeah, possibly I want to add to help the customer to find the right insulation. I want to add the information on the standard on the sleeping bags. The European standard on the sleeping bags defines different temperatures. A minimum temperature where a standard man is going to die due to cold temperatures. Yes, thank you. A second temperature where the standard woman is dying and the standard man is feeling too cold to sleep. Mm-hmm. And then there is a third temperature for feeling cold of the standard woman. And at the end, on the other edge, there is a maximum temperature where a standard person will feel too warm to sleep in the sleeping bag. So if you use something like this, then everybody should make, or every end user should make up his mind what I want to do with the jacket, with the sleeping bag, and so on. When we have a look into the personal protective clothing for the cold storage houses, I've already mentioned, we find a similar system where we can find the right insulation for the right activity and the right working time. So there are options to find right insulation.
So yeah, the question on how to inform consumers is a very interesting question, because we all have the challenge, especially for us as a new fiber in the market. And from our point, it's not easy to reach the consumer, so we will work with customers to express the message and then find a way how together we can communicate the message. And I think one of the problems is that, and I think the Higg Index, maybe a lot of people know, which shows sustainability points on fibers, and they compare all the fibers to the same standard. If something can like this can be done on filling or insulation, it could be a way to start communicating through the internet like the SAC does. This is, of course, a very big project, but it could be something quite interesting for Hohenstein, maybe.
Fair point, Jerome, but I must admit, we're entering the world now where there are so many testing standards on the Higg. I like it because it's clear for sustainability, And I know if I go to Italy and I look at individual sustainable ratings, I'm dealing with over 1,213 of them.
No, I agree. So, it's a very complicated matter. But
and I don't know if any of the audience know Mick Farnworth of Mammut. Do speak to him. Do contact him. A decade ago, he produced a wonderful slide with 10 different thermal ratings on one of the Mammut sleeping bags. And it was a sleeping bag tested in 10 different countries. It was the same sleeping bag, just to show the disparity of it all. But thank you. Iham, have you got anything to add to?
Yes, just.
By the way, when Iham's finished, we've run out of things to answer. So that's when I go and stick the microphone in your face. So please think of how you can take on the team.
It's really, for us, I'm going back to the first statement, Charles, that you made. It's about, for example, like for us in terms of the wool, it's already known, it has been the wool fiber, it's used for centuries, and it's known for its thermal regulation. You can find sheep up in the high mountains in the cold weather, and you can find them in the hot, dry deserts. Then same material, same fiber. Then, but the problem was, how do we communicate this to the industry and to the consumer? So that's why we looked into different test methods, because now everybody's asking about the CLO value, about the water vapor permeability. That's why we had really to look at them and to see why the wool is not performing there at the same conditions. And the thing that we found is that, as I said, it's if we are testing at steady conditions, and we are setting up the conditions where the wool will not perform in real conditions, then it will never work. So what we did is we tried to challenge the conditions that current testing is doing. And what we've done is we've set up different temperatures and we've tried to set up the relative humidity the same so that the water vapor pressure difference is the same. And we try to compare the synthetic material against the wool fiber. And what we found is that by decreasing the temperature from 2015, 12 to 6, the wool has trained in terms of reducing its resistance to evaporative heat loss. While with the polyester material or the synthetic material, it's really, there is not big change. It's raised a little bit with decreasing temperature and then it's dropped again. And the main reason was behind this that because when we are setting different conditions, low temperature at the outside, the condensation will happen. And you can see it where we measured the water inside the material before and after, and the condensation, both the synthetic and the wool material has condensed almost the same amount. But how we can explain the results up? It's really because we know that the wool is hygroscopic, which means that it can absorb water vapor inside itself, while on the polyester or the synthetic, the water stays on the surface of the material, and that was the main reason that there is almost the same resistance to evaporation while we are dropping temperatures, while with the wool, because the water vapor goes inside, the resistance is dropping.
To conclude on that, I think we now recognize that, Stefan, you need to go and speak in detail on PrimaLoft. Jerome, we need to have one-to-ones down on Flocus. And with Ihan, it's HD wool. So rather than get bogged down too much here, thank you. I think that's been brilliant. Should I open it up to the audience? Have we dotted more T's and crossed more I's? Is there greater confusion, or does this start to make a bit more sense?
So with regard to the idea of, or the question of how you communicate relevantly to consumers who are not specialists in a particular sport, and even those who, whether you're a specialist or you're not a specialist, when you invest in a garment, you're going to wear it casually and actively, because you know you're not buying that many garments and you've just invested in one and probably paid work across the spectrum of your lifestyle. So the question is this: the point was really well taken that. Correlating the performance of the garment to outside temperature, like the sleeping bag standard, is the clearest and most direct way of doing it, because it's the personal experience of the consumer at the level that they are correlating it in their own experience. So that's absolutely the right way to go. How do you correlate RTC or CLO to external temperature? And of course, one of the answers is it depends on the activity and all of that. But I mean, coming up with a relevant way of doing that is the key that unlocks the, you know, the door of how to effectively communicate.
Yeah,
I think that's a brilliant question. And I want to give the panel about a minute to think of that, because I'm still taking what he said about how relevant things are. Are there any additional questions that we have before I pass it on to the panel? I've bought a bit of thinking time, but meanwhile...
It's a really quick one.
Good.
In that, when you're thinking about a garment and how it's going to be worn, I just want to clarify that, in fact, it's the heat and the moisture that's coming from the person which is going to affect the performance of the garment more than it, assuming that most people...
More than the outside factors.
Yeah, are not going to be out in... Because we talk about moisture, and moisture affecting the ability of a material to keep you warm. Most people are not going to be out, even if they're, you know, really active in really, really heavy rain or wet conditions. So... Is the moisture from inside more important than the moisture from outside?
If you guys don't mind, I'd like to take the second question first. Yeah, how do we start to juggle with what the environment is throwing at us? Yeah,
it's very important. Definitely agree that the moisture and the temperature of the body is the main. But the way that the garments will behave, it really depends also on the atmosphere. And if the atmospheric conditions are, for example, if you have the same moisture outside, moisture concentration outside as it is on the inside, there will be no evaporation. So it's there is really, for the material to work, you need to take into consideration both the body temperature, humidity, and the conditions that they are in.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I would like to answer your question first. Actually, I think both is important. I mean, moisture, humidity from inside and from outside. For sure, it's depending. Do you have a membrane involved? Yes or no? If you have one involved, it's even more important that humidity gets transported away from your body, yeah, to not stuck into the insulation. We do that as PrimaLoft with coated fibers, yeah, which are hydrophobic. Yeah, so actually, they transport moisture to the next layer, if it's a membrane or outer shell fabric. And if you go outside in, for sure, it's important that even without a membrane, yeah. An insulation, for example, a material like ours, can keep my moisture out of the system up to a certain, at least certain extent. Yeah, not like a membrane for sure, but we have a certain water resistance which gives you some protection at least. Yeah, so both ways are very important. And then answering maybe the other question as well, I think you are totally right. This is a big challenge to have a kind of classification. I mean, the CLOW correlation, which is the explanation of one CLO, is something which we think an end consumer can understand. Yeah, even if you go onto a retail level, this is something which can be communicated, what is one CLO. But now correlating the number of CLOs to a certain temperature range completely really depends on the human nature, on the human being. Yeah, so a woman would perceive differently than a man, and then each man in different ages, different physical condition would perceive it differently. So here it's really different to say minus 10 is, I don't know, 4 CLO, 5 CLO. For sure, you can easily calculate that via your garment system. And again, it's a system. CLO is not only a jacket, it's the whole system, head to toe, yeah? So therefore, you're right, that's a challenge at the end of the day.
So Stefan, what you're telling me is I've only just got to grips with body mapping, different parts of my body on different activities, perspiring at different rates. Yep. Now you're saying I've got to bear in mind how old I am, what sex I am, how much more complicated is this going to become? It's getting really serious on the debate now. We're coming towards the end. You're welcome to pick on us in detail, but hopefully we started reasonably lightweight and we're now getting down to the nitty-gritty. We're going to continue talking, but you know, if you feel this is going above you, it is. Don't worry about it. This is the seriousness of what's being developed. Would anyone else like to take on either of these two questions? Martin.
Yeah, just a short comment. I would like to invite you to my presentation. To my upcoming presentation, I will say a lot more on the thermoregulation of the human body, on the range of utility I've already mentioned. And
We're getting value for money. Martin's here, and he's doing the next presentation, so yeah. Make yourself comfortable.
So maybe I can answer some of the questions already occurred.
Just, I think, in terms of communicating, to have like a system that we can communicate to the consumer, I think definitely right. As an industry, whether it's brand suppliers, we have to come up with a test that we can test the thermal regulation truly, and it really relies on the good quality material. We cannot do it on our own. It needs to be developed. At the moment, there are people have been working, and there is a lot of research about this. For example, like the sweating mannequin is perfect, where you can combine both heat and moisture. However, it's quite expensive, and it's not used currently. Maybe just for research purpose sometimes. It really depends on the brands. So I think it's very important to come up with a test that really can be used.
Dare I say it, we're coming to a close if none of you... Oh, Chris is coming back. No. I'm keen to hear Chris.
This is just a follow-up question to that.
It's a two-way thing.
So I understand... I take your point. The sweating mannequin is absolutely the way to figure
progress.
Out how the performance of the garment relates to, you know, experience, and there you might be able to correlate it to an outside temperature. But once that that correlation study is done, and you figure out what the conversion formula is, that there is, you know, some sort of a linear correlation between the data you get from the sweating mannequin and CLO or RCT, then isn't that what everyone is looking for? A way of, you know, we're just actually using the sweating mannequin to validate CLO against outside temperature and personal experience is a great thing. Or is there a way of just even qualifying, putting in one, you know, little, you know, modifier to the correlation, you know, for the average man at, you know...
Chris, could I summarize that in terms of, is the sweating mannequin going to give us our best laboratory status? Is that a fair question to ask?
Yeah, I accept that point. My question is, can you then go from there to correlate it to CLO or RCT?
Yes, I think for some materials, yes. You can correlate, for example, with synthetic materials, the figures can correlate. However, when you have a material that will react to the atmosphere, then you will have difference, and you will not have correlation between both test methods. That's why, because the sweating mannequin is really in real wearing conditions.
Yeah, and I want to add the CLO value is just dry heat loss. So if you want to say something on when sweating occurs, you have to also test on water vapor resistance, for example, and liquid sweat management. And of course, there are formulas and models where you can already now calculate the comfort of a closing system when you measure both the CLO value with a thermal mannequin, just dry heat loss, and sweat management with the skin model. But of course, the sweating thermal mannequin can close the gap, and then you can get away from the skin model as well. But in the end, the skin model is very good for fabric testing, and mannequins are more for real closing systems.
Thank you.
See, I think it's also a challenge that what do people wear? Do they wear a wool underwear, a polyester top, and then a jacket on top of that, or a sweater, and then a jacket on top of that. So it's very complicated with all the layers which people are wearing in different circumstances. What does somebody wear in Germany, or what does somebody wear in Italy when it's cold? It's completely different. So one side, and I think a wear test in the circumstances by either athletes or common people would be a very different point of testing experience and real experience compared to just putting it in figures. Because I feel if you go to consumers with figures, sometimes they won't understand it, rather than just having an experience in where you do, okay, let's have 1,000 people or 100 people testing in Holland, and what the guy with the sleeping bag in 10 different countries, and then see what the feedback is. But then, yeah, do all the people wear the same top, the same underwear? That's something we cannot control. So it makes it more complicated.
Good point, definitely. Stefan, would you like to add something to?
Yeah, finally, I just would like to add, it's for sure a combination between measurement systems and a value like a glow, and then the practical experience. That's why we say feel the performance. At the end of the day, it needs to be a correlation. And as already mentioned by Jerome, the clothing system is a multi-layering system. You have the so-called onion principle. Yeah, for sure, everything is adding up to multiple layers. And once you are feeling too warm, you just release one of the layers. Yeah, and at the end of the day, you cannot have one layer fulfilling everything. Yeah, it needs to be a combination. Yeah, and this is then really dedicated to the really very specific personal condition and perception of the human being, of the individual human being.
We have zippers, yes.
I just agree with what's been said, really. I think it is a combination of the data that we get through on the fabrics and materials and the information that we get through our athletes and through doing the testing that we do in the lab. And I think by looking at all of those things, that's how we try and get the products as good as they can be before they go on sale to consumers. And through doing that, having athletes who are testing things, say, out of Scotland, and other athletes who are testing things out of the Himalayas and at different times of year, it's that information that means that we can tweak products and make sure that they are as good as they can be before they actually go on sale. So,
brilliant. Yeah. Thank you. Well, to me, that's answered the introduction. What is thermoregulation? What I'm taking away, I'm going to ask the panel just to summarize very briefly, but what I've taken away, it's a lot more complicated than I thought. And possibly the core of maintaining that 37 degrees is optimum. Clothing systems can enhance that when used as a system rather than having the most miraculous single fabric. But that's my view. This is why I work with people who know more than me, especially these two at this end. I must pay respect to these testing parameters, which until I started on this a couple of weeks ago, I didn't realize why there was a necessity to the detail of it. But yes, is there anything the panel would like to add to summarize, or anyone from the audience would like to add something? Oh, happily.
Thanks. This is type of a big picture question. But at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is athletic performance from the athlete. You've talked a little bit about how, you know, thermoregulation can be influenced by fabrics. But have you performed any tests where these fabrics actually aid athletic performance for the athlete?
You mean like a cellulant residue feeding back the infrared reflection, that type of effect? So a fabric effect, or?
Well, yeah, simple example would be if a golfer stepped up to a tee wearing no T-shirt or a cotton T-shirt, a pair of shorts, and hit a drive down the fairway, and then he put on his long golf pants, his polo shirt with bunched up collar around his neck, and hit the same shot. Have you tested if the clothing that he's wearing would give him a better result?
I think that's a very interesting question. I'm not sure it's thermoregulation,
but
this is a good question,
and then I would come to that's comfort solution. Mm-hmm. It's much more than thermoregulation. It's then stretchability of material which might block your swing. I'm also a golfer, yeah. So that you perceive then as negative, yeah. And so actually here you have many different interfaces, yeah. So it's not only thermal regulation in that case.
Yeah, but possibly golf is not the right example.
Should we be beefing up?
In the end, when you go back to the example of the sleeping bags, for example, it is not the performance of a runner or something like this. But if you don't feel comfortable, you will wake up. So. It is very important that your sleeping bag fits you and your ambience you're sleeping in. And there you can have the range of utility helps, because with this range of utility, you will find whether your thermoregulation is supported by the sleeping bag or not. So Of course, clothing just can support to some extent. Also, if you have very worse usability, for example, your evaporation goes down and you will feel too warm on the one hand. And in a wider range, for example, the fireman will die due to
his core
heat
body
stress,
temperature.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant answer.
So,
but again,
if we go back to the marathon runner, hopefully will not die, but he has to go slower to stay alive. So,
and I'm actually going to.
And there are scientific studies working on this, and they also show the benefit with good with clothing on thermal regulation, and then of course performance of the runners, for example.
And to interject here, because we can start to go into the psychology of this, of what you feel wearing the clothing as well. Martin's got a major presentation starting in minutes now. If I could ask the audience, if you enjoyed it, please show your appreciation.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2017 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.